Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 23rd of June. Deepest thanks to John Munson for filling in for me and doing a wonderful job while I was on vacation last week. All things political is how we start our weeks, and today is no exception. We'll start with Iraq. What in the world is going on in that country? What will American military advisors who are being sent to Iraq be doing? Why is the momentum with this group ISIS, about 10,000 at the most fighters, and they are just growing and growing every day? The news today is that they have really closed off the western frontier. It's now beyond Iraqi government control. We'll speak with our guest who has been in Iraq and covered both Iraq 1 and 2. Also, we'll be looking at the Wisconsin governor who's at the center of a lot of investigation these days. As you know, there were documents released last Thursday in the John Doe 2 probe. Prosecutors saying that the governor and his aides violated Wisconsin donation limits and disclosure rules by supervising political spending by other organizations that could accept unlimited secret donations, including money from corporations. Will this eventually get to the Supreme Court, this whole issue of money in campaigns? What do the recent Supreme Court decisions have to do with this? And perhaps most importantly, politically, what will be the effect of John Doe 2 on the governor's desire to be reelected and also perhaps to run for president? Does this damage him or not? The debate continues in the state of Wisconsin. And here, too, as he says, Badger the Badgers is Bob Franken. He's been with us before. He's yet another stellar graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Began his journalism career as news director in Marshfield at a radio station there. Also worked in other Midwestern cities. He's a former CNN political correspondent, covered both Iraq wars, the White House during the George W. Bush administration, Capitol Hill, the Supreme Court, did extensive reporting on the Guantanamo Bay prison camp. His column, Frankincense, is syndicated by King Features. He's been inducted into the Society for Professional Journalists Washington Hall of Fame. Still on TV as a commentator and does a radio show on Sirius. We'll be welcoming phone calls. If you want to bring up other areas, I just thought that Iraq and John Doe 2 would take up a good chunk of our conversation today, but feel free to branch into other political areas as well this hour. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Hello, Bob Franken. Thanks so much for being with us again.
So we're going to be talking about Iraq and Wisconsin, two battlegrounds I see here.
Yes, sir.
Yes, the Wisconsin battle seems to be going on just about as long as the one in Iraq. My.
Yes, it does. Let's start with Iraq. I know you were there twice. And you look at what's happening in the country and wonder why in the world, what were we fighting for? How could this dissolve again into such complete chaos, Bob?
Well, you know, it's interesting to look at this in a historical context. And you can literally go back to about 600 A.D., but we won't go back that far.
All right.
Let's just go back to the second war in Iraq. There were many people at the time, and quite frankly, I was listening to them quite a bit, who were comparing Iraq under Saddam Hussein to Yugoslavia under Tito. Mm. That is to say, both countries had factions that really hated each other, religious factions, but they were kept apart by a ruthless dictator. Tito, as I said, in Yugoslavia, and Iraq under Saddam Hussein. And predictably, the same thing happened in Iraq as happened in Yugoslavia. The moment that this cohesive ruthless dictator was out of the picture, all hell broke loose. And here we are in a situation where many people are now questioning, first of all, the decision to go into Iraq in the first place, which, of course, happened under what I like to call the Dick Cheney administration, actually the Bush administration. And others are questioning the decision by President Obama to pull out when he did. What a mess. What a mess.
What and, a mess.
It is a mess. And besides that, if you go back to the British mandate in the late after World War II, which divided up the Middle East, so to speak, Iraq was a concoction. You basically had three countries there, the Sunnis, the Shia, and the Kurds, who were just because somebody decided to put them all together into this country they were now calling Iraq. So the Levant, which is the other name for that terrorist group, the Sunni group, which is to say the Islamics in Syria, it's oftentimes called ISIL instead of ISIS. Mm-hmm. And the Levant is really a creation of history that was the Middle East, just about everything east of the Mediterranean. So you have, as I say, something that has historically been a trouble spot, and it is, of course, again.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's spend a little more time on ISIS. My understanding, Bob, is that at the most it's 10,000 fighters who must be extraordinarily well-trained. I'm wondering where they're getting all their ammunition, and they're just going from one place to another and taking over. They're really powerful warriors. Who are they?
Well, first of all, they're getting a lot of their ammunition from the Americans, by which I mean the Iraqi troops, who were very badly trained, as it turned out, and many of whom were Sunnis, who were unwilling to fight against other Sunnis, have abandoned literally hundreds of millions of dollars worth of equipment. And the insurgents have come in, and they've taken that equipment, and they've basically been able to just roll over the regular Iraqi army. In addition to which, in Baghdad, you have somebody in power, Maliki, who is very, very pro-Shia, and he has antagonized just the country's entire Sunni population.
So when Kerry goes there and the president makes hints that we would like to see somebody else in charge in Baghdad, are we actively working to get somebody else in charge in Baghdad?
Well, not officially, but certainly unofficially. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kerry is going and saying, in effect, to Maliki, why don't you give up the power you so far fought so hard to get? And I wouldn't hold my breath on that one. One of the wild cards, of course, is the role of Iran. Iran is a Shia country and has been a natural enemy of the Sunnis. And suddenly the United States is working behind the scenes, certainly, with the Iranian government. This is the same Iranian government that refers to the U.S. as the Great Satan.
So tell me more about ISIS. I've heard that people describe them as much worse than Al-Qaeda, that these are really bad, bad, bad guys.
Well, they were thrown out of Al-Qaeda.
They were?
I mean, it doesn't get much worse than that. Huh. Yeah, the Al-Qaeda group said they had such a terrible reputation for being even worse than the Taliban that Al-Qaeda said, you can't use our name. You're not to be associated with us, which is why they came up with the ISIS or ISIL name.
Mm-hmm. And is there any possibility that the people who would like to preserve Iraq in some form or another will learn how to take up arms and use them effectively and drive these people back to wherever their home is? I don't even know where that is.
Well, their home is all over the Middle East. The fact is that the answer to your question is probably not. These are people who are now very battle-hardened because of the fighting in Syria. And that, of course, adds to the complexity of all this. These are the people who are the ones who are against Assad in Syria. And they have learned how to fight, and so they're battle-hardened, which the Iraq army is not. So now comes the question, what role will the United States play?
Mm-hmm.
The president knows full well, the President Obama knows full well, that the people of the United States are not going to stand to a full-fledged commitment in Iraq. The question becomes, what ability will we have by using air power to control what's going on in Iraq?
I think of all the billions and billions of dollars, Bob, that we have spent on intelligence, all our anti-terrorism efforts. We have blocks and blocks of buildings, and we're taking information all over the world on these groups. Aren't we kind of late to the game in finding out about ISIS and what they could possibly do?
Well, you know, you raise such a good question. I mean, I've heard some skeptics say that the intelligence community in the United States was focusing all its resources on spying on the American people, and as a result wasn't doing an effective job in Iraq. This is no surprise. I mean, ISIS has been saying for quite some time that it was going to do this, number one. Number two, ever since the Americans have left, we've had any number of terrorist acts over there. But for some reason, the U.S. was not prepared for this, and certainly the Iraqi government was not prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. So those military advisors, is it 300? What are they going to do?
Well, they're going to be spotters, they're going to be trainers, et cetera, et cetera. And the moment that you say military advisors an awful lot of people hearken back to the Vietnam
yes.
War, where the first American involvement was military advisors.
Tell me about your time in Vietnam, or in Vietnam, your time in Iraq, Bob, what you were covering and what your thoughts were about whether or not this would ever be settled.
Well, you know, first of all, what I was covering was the expression in television is get good bang bang. And I was right in the middle of that. And, of course, that means be in the middle of the combat. And I was. And some of the tougher fighting was in the second one. And that was I was around Nasiriyah, which is where some of the heaviest fighting was going on. And we did get that. But one of the things I noticed from the get-go was that although America was claiming, the administration was claiming, that's the Bush administration and Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, and George W. Bush, that the Americans would roll in, they would be welcomed with open arms and would be able to transform this country into a democracy. Nobody, and I noticed this on the ground immediately, nobody noticed, gave any thought to the fact that they're so culturally different from the Americans and, you know, the West and all that kind of thing. One of the first stories I did was this totally jammed up roadblock. The reason it was jammed up is you had all male soldiers trying to search everybody who came up to this point, forgetting the fact that there's no way in the world that they were going to be allowed to touch a Muslim woman.
Mm.
Nobody had given that any thought. And that seems to be something that was that really held the Americans back. They had to first learn the country, and it took a long time for that to happen. Meanwhile, Americans were dying.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the president finds it necessary to send advisors now?
Because, well, one can argue that politically he can't be the one who was there when Iraq fell. It can't happen on his watch. But beyond that, forgetting the fact that he's trying to deflect blame, Iraq is about to fall. The way things are going right now, it's just a matter of time before Baghdad does. And the United States cannot allow that to happen. 4,000-plus Americans died, and thousands and thousands and thousands were wounded.
Yes.
There would be an uproar, if not an uprising, if, in fact, Iraq suddenly became a haven for the worst kind of terrorists.
Do you think we left too soon?
Well, that's the debate right now. The debate is between those who argue that the United States left too soon and those who say we shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And what about the efforts to persuade the Iraqi government to be more inclusive to Sunnis? Have they been kept out of government? Is there, if that hasn't happened at this point, it's hard to imagine that all of a sudden you're going to have this terrifically inclusive government.
Right. Somebody's going to get together and sing the Muslim version
right.
of Kumbaya.
Right.
It isn't going to happen voluntarily. The fact of the matter is that the Shia and the Sunnis are bitter, bitter enemies. It literally goes back to 600 AD, 632 to be precise. And they hate each other. And as a result, the different alignments in the Middle East have a lot to do with that. So now Saddam Hussein was Sunni, and the resentment in that country was the fact that this Sunni person was overriding the interests of the Shia. So now he was overthrown, the Shia take charge, and they have no interest, no inherent interest, in embracing the Sunni. But the United States is saying, you have to do it. You have to have a coalition government. Add to that the Kurds, who occupy lands that include Jordan, that include Turkey and Iraq, and you have an amazing mess.
You think Baghdad is going to fall?
Well, I think that unless the United States intervenes or somebody suddenly decides to overcome these centuries of animosity, yes, Baghdad will fall.
Mm-hmm. And what about other countries in the world? Are they sending military advisors as well?
Well, obviously the countries in the Middle East have interest in all of this kind of thing. And the country to watch, as we've talked about just a moment ago, is Iran. Iran certainly is sending people into the fray.
Mm-hmm. And back to the ISIS, I was reading today that they don't seem to be very afraid of dying, so that when they do die in their battle here, their ranks are immediately replenished by fighters from Syria, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Chechnya, and also Europe. They're also freeing prisoners.
They are, and again, these are the same people who were in Syria, which is right across the border, and part of that Levant that we were talking about. So they don't recognize these borders. However, the first thing that they've done in the last day or so is to take over all these borders between Syria and Iraq. So they control that land now.
What a mess. Our guest is Bob Franken. For all things political, we could spend the whole hour on Iraq, and I'm sure we'll have shows in the not-too-distant future on Iraq. But he spent time in both the first Iraq War and the second Iraq War. He explained a little bit about what he was doing there. It's a mess. We can certainly talk about whether or not we left too soon. What happened to American intelligence that we didn't see the threat of this group, ISIS, which it isn't that many fighters, I don't think, 10,000 at the most, who are just taking city after city with Iraqis seeming incapable of fighting and just not fighting. What are we to do there? Is it okay to let Iraq fall? We are going to move into conversation about Governor Scott Walker and what broke, the big story that broke last Thursday, the documents, John Doe 2 documents, released as part of a federal lawsuit suggesting that the governor's top aides directed political spending of outside groups, many of them nonprofits, controlling some of them. Have Supreme Court decisions recently made this a fairly murky area? Wisconsin has a tough set of campaign contribution laws. Will all that's happening in Wisconsin force the Supreme Court to look at this issue once again? And once again, stark political divisions in this state as to what you believe. A bigger question that we'd like Bob to take on is whether or not it creates problems in terms of reelection for the governor of the state or for national ambitions to run for the presidency, or if it's such a complicated story. You know, I wonder why somebody can't just make this a little simpler just for everybody to understand. It seems as though it is rather complicated, so reporters spend their time explaining. But for those of you who have been following this pretty closely, I'm sure many have, what do you think the answers are to those questions? And here's how you reach us. Please do pick up the phone and call 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Bob has had a really distinguished career in journalism and continues to have a distinguished career. He has a column that is distributed by King Features, Frankincense. He is on TV as a commentator and was on CNN for a number of years, does a radio show on Sirius, has covered the George W. Bush administration, Supreme Court, Guantanamo Bay. I want to ask him about Guantanamo Bay as well, and many other issues of importance. To your calls momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we go to phone calls, we have a full line. I'd like for you to comment on the John Doe 2 probe, what was made public last Thursday, and what it indicates about whether or not the Supreme Court needs to again take up the issue of campaign finance as it exists in the state of Wisconsin and perhaps other states, and also what this suit does for the political ambitions of our governor in terms of reelection and in terms of his possible run for the presidency, Bob.
Well, you know, first of all, there's an expression, I know you've heard it in broadcasting, called MIGO, which means my eyes glaze over. And this, if you start delving into the details of it, one's eyes do glaze over. It's convoluted, to put it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is that your governor, Scott Walker, is accused of meddling illegally in the campaign, the recall campaign. In addition to which, there are some very, very delicate laws that have to do with the communication between these private PACs, these super PACs, and the candidate and the campaign, the specific campaign. And according to the prosecutor, and this is the national story, he stands accused of having direct conversation with Karl Rove, the famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, Karl Rove, who has the site American crossroads. That could drag Karl Rove into the act, who is a main Republican player nationally.
Mm-hmm. Do you think all of this goes to the Supreme Court because their recent decisions have made what's going on in Wisconsin perhaps legal in terms of what the Supreme Court might say, but not legal in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, you're talking about the Citizens Unite decision for the most part, and that had to do with the right of entities to, in fact, spend whatever they wanted to spend under a variety of circumstances. I think that this is a little bit of a separate issue. I think when all is said and done, when I remember my television heritage and reduce it to 15 seconds, what we are talking about here is whether he violated the laws which prevent direct communication, coordination, between a candidate and these supposedly nonpartisan entities that have been set up and passed muster by the IRS.
Mm-hmm. It also has something to do with dark money, so that we may, in Wisconsin, have stricter laws wanting disclosure of where money is coming from, and this way this was done allowed millions and millions and millions of dollars to come into the state, and we really don't have a record of where it's coming from.
Well, you know, and it's what's interesting is that this is being argued legally on two levels of court. You have the state courts involved in this, as you know better than I do, and you also have the federal court. And then you have both sides spinning the decisions that these courts have made, which is when the eye glazing really begins to take hold.
Right. And does the eye glazing need to take hold? I wonder about reporting on this particular issue. Is there a way to have the public completely engaged, Bob, in what is a very important issue?
The problem nowadays is that the public is so disgusted. Look at any poll, and you will see that. The public is so disgusted that it is almost unwilling to engage, even in the simple issues. So I really believe that something like this is ripe for the spinners, by which I mean the consultants, to take over and spin it to their heart's content. I think that all the public does, meaning the voting public, is to form impressions. And that gets to something that you were talking about. And that was the question about, does this help or hurt the governor in his reelection aspirations and, of course, with the possibility that he's going to run for president? I think the answer is yes, not because of the fact, but because of the impressions that are left. In the same way that Chris Christie was hurt, not by the facts, which we don't even really know about his involvement there, but by the impressions that were left by the scandal in New Jersey about Chris Christie. I think the same dynamic is at work in Wisconsin.
Let's go to phone calls. Nate from Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Nate.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I thought in those who defend the idea of money is speech, which I am very cautious about and not necessarily a believer in, have tried to defend it here in Wisconsin as somehow educating voters, except political money isn't always encouraging of honesty. And with this, as you have just touched on, you don't even know where it's coming from, so you don't know who may not be telling you the truth. But one of the other things that this touches on with Governor Walker is we had John Doe 1, which showed a bunch of people had been working for him when he was a county executive in the county level of government, basically doing his political work on county time. And they never attached him directly to that because there wasn't an email. In this situation, there is an email, and it makes me more suspicious that he was involved in number one, but simply never got caught with number two. And I imagine that he was the guest alluded to the spinning of various judicial decisions, but one of the things that does touch on in this situation is disclosure, in that the federal judge here, who Walker cited as favoring him, I believe went beyond where the Supreme Court seems to be going with money, which, I mean, that puts me a little bit off, but this person essentially encourage circumventing of campaign finance rules, I believe, including disclosure.
Judge Randa's decision, is that who you're talking about? Nate?
The Judge Rodna, I believe.
Randa, yeah.
Randa, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Bob.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that I'm a little bit uncomfortable on radio talking about number one and number two. I have to point that out.
Right.
But beyond that, this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about. The federal judge, when he made his ruling, made a temporary ruling that now the Walker people are saying, look, the federal judge has just dismissed us and all that. All he has done is to basically hold things in place. And the issue that Nate was just talking about is exactly the issue that we've been discussing, which is this coordination. Was Walker caught coordinating with Karl Rove, which is supposed to be a forbidden area?
Right.
And if so, would that violate federal campaign laws? And again, the Supreme Court's ruling is that corporations are people, as Mr. Romney used to say. And that is still a hotly debated subject in this country. Now, whether Wisconsin's laws would prevail in this particular case is something that the Supreme Court would probably ultimately have to bring up.
Right. Thank you, Nate, for your call. Walt in Madison. Hi, Walt.
Hi. I thought I heard news reports that there was opposition to the release of information because it would shed light on the names of two entities or two individuals, I'm not sure, who were contributors to Walker. And I wonder that the release of the 250-some pages of information last week, that did that expose who those people or entities are, and if so, who are they?
I don't believe it did, Walt. I've been reading a lot about this. I do not believe that it exposed their names.
Well, and you know, the other thing is the larger question of whether or not people who contribute to a political campaign should have their names out there, as opposed to hiding behind the secrecy laws that have been set up by these super PACs. I'm of the opinion, and this is probably because I'm a reporter, that everything should be public, certainly in the political process, and we should know. The argument against it, of course, is that they will face retribution, which is why people oftentimes don't want to be identified as contributing to a campaign or not.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, again, I think that if we're going to be a democracy, the government must be as open as it all possible.
And I could be wrong about that, Walt, and somebody will call in and correct me, but I don't believe that they have been named.
Can I ask one follow-up?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Who are the prosecutors, and can they be characterized as politically motivated?
Well, prosecutors sometimes have been, and they have. In this particular case, they are being described as politically motivated. Quite frankly, I can't tell from this distance whether they are.
Well, and if you look at it, this becomes so partisan, it's incredible. Those who are in favor of this running its full course and think something might be going on here will point to the fact that one of the Republican prosecutors who had an article in the paper yesterday from his press person saying what an honorable person he was coming up for a big judgeship, didn't get it, but was like a runner-up from George W. Bush, that he's served his country honorably and is a Republican. So there are Republicans. It's more than one prosecutor. There are prosecutors from all over the state. And some are Republican and some are Democrats, as far as I can tell. But it is amazing. Let me ask you about this, Bob, because you see this in Washington all the time. If you support the governor, you hear a certain line of reasoning, and we will during this hour. If you don't support the governor, you will hear another line of reasoning, and everybody is steadfast in his or her field. Let's really dig into this and find out exactly what's going on. It's just phenomenal.
Well, I'm sure you're aware about that poll that was released last week by the Pew Research people.
Yes.
Where
yes.
The result of it was that we have become so hardened that the Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, and liberals have so little to do with each other that, among other things, the consistently conservative people, 30% of them said they would be very upset if their daughter married a Democrat.
Oh, my gosh.
And 1 in 4 of the consistently liberal respondents said that they would be just as upset if their daughter married a Republican. which, of course, raises in my mind a possible remake of the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
But, I mean, we've gotten to that point in this country. So the point that you're raising is that everybody is talking past each other.
Right. Absolutely. And not even living in the same neighborhoods.
Well, that's right. I mean, you have the red states, which, by the way, are the majority of the states, and the blue states where a big chunk of the population is. But it almost calls into question the name of this country, which is the United States of America. We are dividing quite a bit now.
Yeah. Thanks, Walt, for your call. Doug in Birmingham, Michigan. Hi.
Hi there. I'm going to recircle back to the Iraq discussion, if I might. I was surprised, I guess, particularly with Bob's long experience, that there wasn't some discussion from him, and there hasn't been among the other pundits in national media about Vice President Biden's seemingly very insightful decision a few years ago that Iraq should simply be partitioned into a Kurd, a Sunni, and a Shia nation, or three nations, or I guess kind of a confederation. He kind of went back to the old confederation, like the original U.S. Now, I know it's sort of de rigueur within the Beltway to sort of say, oh, what's Joe said now? But he spent 30 years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I think he was right then, and I think he's even more right. He hasn't resurfaced it, but I think it's an even more timely idea now. I'll listen to the discussion now.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you.
First of all, I'm deeply offended you called me a pundit. True though it may be. but beyond that, I read an article about the point that you're making, and it said that right now Joe Biden is probably having at least a quiet I told you so moment. Because he had long argued for the partition of the country into those three regions. The only flaw in that is would those three states, whatever you want to call them, provinces, whatever, be constantly at war with one another? And again, that brings up the question, and it's a Hobson's choice, would things have been better off had we let the ruthless dictator in place to hold things together in ways that we didn't even want to know about?
And today, Bob, you're not a pundit, you're a badgerer, if there is such a word, right?
Well, badgerer would be my school and probably describe what I do for a living.
Let's go to Gary in Glendale. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Kathleen. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I have to go back to the opening discussion as well, although there's certainly a lot to talk about where you've been right now. Regarding Bob's views about paralleling Yugoslavia to Iraq, Tito died in about 1980, and it wasn't until the fall of the Berlin Wall and the collapse of the Soviet Union that Yugoslavia started breaking up with Slovenia and Croatia, who had been long part of the Habsburg Empire, you know, since the Middle Ages, breaking off. And, of course, the thing that separates the various Yugoslavs is a religious faith with Bosnian and Herzegovinian Muslims and Croats and Slovenes being Roman Catholic, and then Serbs and Montenegrins, etc., being Orthodox. So I just, there was quite a gap and quite different circumstances. And, of course, Yugoslavia was created at the same time the borders of the current Persian Gulf Middle East were created after the Paris Peace Conference, when the League of Nations gave a mandate to Britain and France, based on the Sykes-Picot Treaty, to divide up Lebanon and Syria going to France as a mandate, and then the rest of the Middle East going to Britain, where all the oil was. So other than that, everything is fine in the discussion.
Well,
but
you do make the point, but Tito's successors buttressed by the fact that there was a communist presence in that part of the world.
He died in 1980, so the government
continued.
No, I understand,
but the successors did. But when the communist world dissolved, the Yugoslav Federation, I believe we could call it Federation, also began to dissolve. And the religious, the analogy really has to do more with the religious differences, which you just described in Yugoslavia, and also, of course, cause an uproar in the Muslim world. You have, in that case, two divisions, the Shia and the Muslims, and on the sidelines heckling are the Kurds.
Yeah. Yeah, the Kurds at the Paris Peace Conference made a case for a separate country, but it didn't happen. You know, so they were silent until our invasion in 03.
Thank you, Gary, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. It's All Things Political you're listening to this hour on the Ideas Network. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and our guest is Bob Franken. As you may be able to tell, Bob is graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison and started his broadcasting career here in the state of Wisconsin. He is a commentator on television, does a radio show, was on CNN for a number of years, and has a column, Franken Sense, which is syndicated by King Features. He has covered important issues for many years, both Iraq wars, the White House during the George W. Bush administration, Capitol Hill, and the Supreme Court. Here's the number. A couple lines are open. They've been darn crowded, but you could get through right now at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For you to join this hour conversation, what do you think of the documents that were released in the John Doe 2 probe, last Thursday's revelations? We're also talking about Iraq. I'm interested in your response to Iraq. What do you think should happen there? Can the president afford to have the country fall during his administration, or would it be just too terrible a thing for all of the people who served there and who lost their lives and were injured in that war? Does it indicate that it was a waste of our time? Is there a way to salvage the country? What do you think of the mess that is in Iraq right now? And bring up other subjects as well. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. We go to Anne in Madison next. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Kathleen. I wanted to protest vehemently the comment by your guest that the public's eyes glaze over when it comes to these tricky little details, because my understanding is that the fact that Judge Randa, who's basically a right-wing political operative in judge's clothing, got involved and tried to stop the investigation and have all the evidence destroyed is a highly somewhat dubious and very complicated legal technique. And I think that this is something that Scott Walker has relied on through his whole career. I believe he's represented chiefly by Michael Best and Friedrich, which represents major polluters and huge corporations and far right wing politicians, and is not squeamish about their tactics. So I would like to know what part the lawyers for Walker are playing in some of these unusual moves by some unusual judicial figures.
And before we get an answer to that, Anne, wouldn't you agree that a lot of people are finding this, maybe it's the way that it's being presented, to be very difficult to understand? I know you're following it avidly.
Somewhat difficult, Kathleen. Yeah, a little bit difficult, but that's because most of our media are not explaining it. I mean, mm-hmm. and I don't even know whether all the reporters, I think Wisconsin Public Radio has great reporters, but most of the reporters all over the country are not... They're not giving the public the information they have access to. And I think, these legal technicalities to anyone who isn't dead, I think are really, they should be fascinating. And if they're not, we all better wake up and start looking into them. And I'm not convinced that most of the public is bored by this stuff or confused. I think, with the Internet, we can all look it up if we want to.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the call, Ann. What about judges involved here? And I know that you're not in Wisconsin now, so I want to be fair to you. You haven't followed this as closely as all of us have. But there have been accusations that no matter what side you're on, that there are allegations that judges have been partisans in this whole debate. And judges are partisan on the Supreme Court as well. Judges are partisan all over the country.
Well, first of all, she is not the first person today to vehemently protest anything that I've said. That's just a way of life. but she sort of made the argument against her because she got into the weeds of this kind of thing. And I think that most people, when they start dealing with all the complexities, and I'll answer your question in a moment, but when people start dealing with all this complexities, they just basically say, you know, the heck with it. This is they're just a bunch of bad guys, which, by the way, is justifiable. And I don't really care, and I'm not going to get involved because it's too much work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as for what I've considered for a long time, this charade of judicial independence, I've come to conclude that judges at all levels are, in fact, political creatures. I think that it's very easy to draw that conclusion when you watch the decisions at the Supreme Court, which is not to say that they don't apply legal principles, but they apply them from the perspective of their ideology, and we see the result. And certainly on the state and local levels, you see that same thing happening. In Wisconsin, you've had quite a bit of ugliness over the years.
Yes.
With the politics of all that kind of thing, where it's sometimes become quite, how shall I say it, unjudicial.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put that much credence on the impartiality of judges when it comes to things ideological and things political. Nor can you expect the prosecutors are going to always follow the ideal of impartiality, which is supposed to be fundamental to our belief in the law. Quite
right.
Frankly, I think that this is a very, very serious problem in the United States.
Hmm. It is a serious problem. It sort of undermines what we're all about, doesn't it?
One would think, yes,
yeah.
Because we're supposed to be under the rule of law, but that brings with it a premise that this is going to be impartially administered, and I think that there's very strong evidence that that's not usually the case.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for your call. Bill in Wausau. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Bill.
I'd like to just make the point in regard to Governor Walker's trying to circumvent the Wisconsin campaign funding laws, that if the memo he sent to Karl Rove is indeed true, then I think he was at the center of actually trying to do that. Now, whether or not he falls over the line and is found guilty of violating the laws, I think is immaterial. I think the important point is what he tried to do. And I think that people in Wisconsin should judge whether or not they want a governor governing the people of Wisconsin who would do this sort of thing, and with the past performances that he's had in regard to stepping over the line.
Well,
I'll take your comments.
All right, thank you. Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Well, you know, I'm reminded when people start talking about politicians doing this kind of thing, I keep on being reminded of Casablanca, where somebody says, I'm shocked, shocked. Politicians are capable of doing any number of things. The problem for politicians is when they get caught. This might be a case where Governor Walker has gotten caught in something that may or may not be illegal, but certainly is looked upon by people as unsavory.
When you think about people who were real, honest, straight shooters, admirable leaders, do you think who would those be, Bob?
Well, they're certainly not here. I think what happens is the practice of politics is to large degree sort of eroded into the practice of deception. What used to be demagoguery is now just the normal way of doing business. Running a positive campaign, everybody says he wants to do it, but nobody does it. Everybody who is polled says, yes, I'd prefer a positive campaign, but the fact of the matter is that they respond to the negative campaigning.
Right.
I'm closely involved with a group called No Labels, which is trying to push the idea of everybody coming together and coming up with solutions by compromising. But compromise has become a synonym for treason.
Mm-hmm.
In both parties, and that is why I'm beginning to wonder if the United States is going to be able to continue to be the leader in the world. The Constitution itself was a product of compromise, and some of those grand compromises made it possible for this country to exist, but we seem to have abandoned that idea.
Let's go to Carol in Milwaukee. Hi, Carol.
Hello. I heard someone mention the Iraq war, potentially the U.S. more involvement in Iraq, and I believe that's a mistake because it's not really for the United States citizens that they go to Iraq. It's the benefits are more for people who make money off of war and the 1%, and there, it's a, like a charade to find excuses for all the military involvement around the world when people here are need food stamps and can hardly even get them.
Bob?
Well, you know, that argument is made a lot of times, and I'm not about to get into a debate about that because I'm, frankly, attracted to some of the arguments that are made. In addition to that, the argument is made that the whole reason for the Iraq War was all the oil reserves that are over there. And the companies that would benefit from in taking those reserves over. However, having said that, it is probably indisputable that if Iraq would fall, that would be a clear and present danger to the United States. So overlooking everything else that the accusations that are made about the 1%ers benefiting only from what's happening in Iraq. The fact of the matter is that if Iraq became a base of operations against the United States, this country would be in considerably increased danger.
In what way, Bob?
Well, because it would become a major base for operations. It would be a place where the most militant enemies of the United States could stage operations against the United States, both in this country and in other parts of the world.
Thanks, Carol, for your call. Kurt in Chippewa Falls, probably our last caller. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. I'd like to challenge the impression left that this disdain between conservatives, liberals, Democrats, Republicans, that there's some kind of equivalency there. I've been involved in politics since the 60s, and I've seen through most of that time a intentional, concerted, planned program by Republicans and their corporate sponsors to demonize anything liberal or democratic. At one time, there was even a book that says, that Democrats were mentally ill, or liberals were. So this, only recently have Democrats, to whatever extent we have, become disdainful of the far right Republicans. This has been a planned effort to make it so on the part of the those who have been sponsoring Republican propaganda for the last 30, 40 years.
You know, Kathleen, both sides despise the idea of equivalence.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, sometimes I think that they are probably right. Of all things, pardon my name dropping, but I shared a cab with Senator Joe Biden at one point, and he was complaining about the fact that he was running against somebody who was a total nutcase, a Republican, and that the media insisted in giving him an equal voice. And I thought that he had a valid complaint. But point number one is, who's going to decide who's the nutcase and who isn't? And secondly, I think it is fair to say that both sides can be accused of practicing dirty politics. The question really becomes who started the fight, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
And those of us who are reporters, those of us who cling to the idea that we're not supposed to take sides, have fertile ground on both sides.
Mm-hmm. We just want people to talk to each other. Come on.
Well, except for the fact that if they're just going to call each other names, which is what they're doing right now.
Meaningfully
and by the way,
talk.
You know, when he's saying it's only the Republicans, I would remind him of the movies that Michael Moore would make about George W. Bush.
Yeah. Bob, thank you ever so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. Please come back.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it already.
Thank you, Bob. Bob Franken, our guest for all things political. He's a former CNN political correspondent, still is a commentator on television, does a serious radio show, and is author of a column, Frankincense, which is syndicated by King Features. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to K.P. as well for on-air production in downtown Milwaukee. We have another hour to go. Stay with us. The Ivory Tower is the subject.